It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
On Blogs, we'll discuss the role in the world of YA panel. I am Cos Meadows and I will be modding this shindig. I will let my panelists introduce themselves, starting from the right. Go!
Real quick note, this is being recorded for the Skippy Vanny Show, so if you really don't want to be on that, give your question to someone else and have them ask for you. But it shouldn't be a problem, it hasn't been so far. But hi, I'm Sean Duke. I am a member of the Skippy Vanny Show, which is on the Hugo ballot this year, which is cool. And my blogging side, I blog at The World in the Satin Bag. So is that that's what you're looking for, right?
Yep. Awesome. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Patricia Ash. I am the editor-in-chief of Gearheart Steampunk Glamour Review. I did not, in fact, know that I had a blog until I was put on this panel. But what I... And then I realized, oh, wait, I have a website. I update it every week with reviews of steampunk things. That's a blog! So I've got a blog. And I have put the website here. It is gearheartsmag.com. If you have steampunk, send it to me, and I will review it for you.
I'm Erin Underwood, and I'm a writer and editor and publisher, and I used to be a blogger. I used to also be a literary assistant for a YA writer. So I spent a lot of time researching blogs, finding bloggers, sending stuff out to bloggers, and had so much fun with the bloggers that I made my own blog. And then I had so much fun with the blog, I turned it into a small press.
I'm Liz Yeager, and I used to run my favorite blogs from around 2007 till 2012, when I jumped ship and I became an author. So I think I was one of the first UK YA bloggers that publishers sort of figured out what block, through me basically, why the publishers in the UK figured out what one of the bloggers were, because they were big in the States, but very few people actually knew what they were in the UK, so that was pretty weird, because I didn't know what it was either. I just wrote reviews of books that I read in life.
And I am Foz Meadows. In addition to being a bipedal mammal with delusions of immortality, I am also a young adult urban fantasy writer, and I keep a blog called Shatter Snipe, which is just at Foz Meadows at WordPress. And for which, for reasons unknown to me, I am nominated for a Best Fan Writer Hugo this year, which is pretty exciting. So I think the way we're going to run this is, if this is an hour-long panel, I think we can have us ranting on and rambling for the first 35 minutes, and after that we'll open up the floor to questions. So the panel description is: bloggers have become an integral part of the YA book promotion. How do authors find these bloggers? Why should readers trust their opinions? What are the best book blogs out there right now, and what makes them so useful? So, does anyone have an opening comment that they would like to go with?
I can make one. So, it's really interesting. I got to know a guy called John, who ran the SF Review. And John always said to me, any books that you get in and you read it and you review it, the end line is, especially for children's and YA books, the bottom line is, do you want to spend your pocket money on that book? So this is how you review it. It's like, you give the reasons yes, you give the reasons no. Because obviously as adults we've got far more money than kids do, whereas kids don't. I mean, we automatically assume, you know, that our readership would be teenagers, kids, and occasionally their parents. So you basically have to sit down and show that, yes, this book is worthy of your £6 or £7 or the time back to 1299. So, and that's something that really actually quite scared me quite a lot, just because like, suddenly you've got people reading it.
The responsibility.
The responsibility, man. Who knew?
Any comment?
Not on that point. No. Sorry.
Well, I think it's this interesting idea, because this is something that comes up a lot in the YA blog sphere, the question of who are reviews for? Are they for readers? Are they for authors? Yeah. Are they for publishers? I always think they are pretty much directly meant to be for readers.
Okay.
And the idea that, I mean, even if you rant and rave about how excellent and wonderful the book is, that's still not, I mean, it can be a promotional tool for authors, but that's not its primary function. Its primary function is to share with the people who are going to read the book, hey, this is why you should be doing this thing. But I think it's also important if we're going to be talking about, as this is blogging rather than discreetly reviews, because there's a lot of crossover between book reviews and book meta, where you're analysing a particular series or tropes or characters through the lens of multiple books, and discrete reviews which are just about one. And there is a lot of crossover between that, which I think is an important facet, because it's not just here is the beginning of the process to get you to read the book. It's getting you to come back after you've read the book and have a conversation about it, and have a conversation about the next one and what other books are similar to it. And I think, you know, particularly for teenagers who might be sitting in school thinking, God, why am I reading this book from the 1800s that I have no interest in whatsoever? Not understanding that this is what this kind of thing that they don't want to do in school necessarily is exactly what they're doing for their own pleasure.
Right.
Or maybe they are acutely aware of it, the fact that this is something that I want to write about in my own life, as opposed to the stuff I have to do at school. It's an academic connection.
Well, and I also think there's another aspect of book blogs beyond just reviewing books. And this is the thing that actually got me into setting up my own blogs. I love talking to people. I love interviewing people. And so one thing that book blogs also do, in addition to reviewing the books, is they get a chance to talk to the author. And oftentimes the book bloggers are fans. And so they ask the questions fans want to know, some of those personal details about the author that, you know, their readers, people just like them, want to know. I mean, silly questions like, what's your favorite candy bar, what's your favorite color, to, you know, why did you pick that color, that character, and how much of that character really is part of you, you know. And so you get that whole spectrum. And I think that's a really nice complimentary aspect to blogging that often doesn't get talked about that much.
When I interview authors for my magazine, we end up talking about their cats most of the time.
Well, because cats are basically aliens that live among us.
Oh, yes.
They don't obey the laws of physics.
Most authors have them. I don't know why.
It's because they're independent and they're lovely.
I have two.
Say, I have one. Yeah, and he's evil.
Well, yes, but that's why we love him.
True. I just wanted to add, because Fuzz, you were saying that you know, younger people, and perhaps anyone who's reading and talking about books, are probably acutely aware that they're kind of engaging in what school asks them to do without even realizing. And I think it becomes very obvious when you look at the Tumblr community, where there's so much literary analysis going on there. And I don't think they're aware they're writing literary analysis.
Well, I think this is the thing, particularly within really rigid school systems, which are very grade oriented. America. But there is a lot of pressure put on you to give particular answers. I mean, I have grown up to be a writer and an author. I've always done this. And I was, as an Australian school student, furious at the way we would get told to write critical analysis and essays, because you would get told, here are the signpost words you have to use, please use the word juxtapositioning, which is why I now loathe and despise it for fiery vengeance. You know, you weren't allowed to criticize the interpretive line that the class wanted you to take. Whereas when you were writing stuff for yourself on your blog, you'd say, oh, I think this is how the story works. I think this is why this character is important.
Well, and what's also interesting is the book bloggers tend to read each other's blogs and become friends. And so you'll see, oh, look, that was a really interesting take on the book. I didn't agree with that. But, and so you'll see sometimes in the comments and sometimes in their own blog posts, they will reference other bloggers and their take on the book.
Yeah.
And then you get an actual, you know, a natural dialogue, a natural conversation that spans multiple people. And it's really quite interesting how that all started growing naturally out of the blogosphere.
So I remember when... like the blogging community within the UK, not necessarily genre, but especially the children's and YA bloggers, they it started really small, and people were absolutely terrified about saying anything
negative
because they were scared that publishers would stop sending books. And the thing is this, I've spoken to loads of PR people about it, and it's negativity, as long as you don't attack the author personally, unless they are generally like very bad people, then anything goes, as long as you can justify it, because
a fair review,
because we all have different opinions about things.
Well, I think this is an important point, and it ties into part of the panel description, which is why should readers trust their opinions. And I think because there has been so much dialogue about should you just be nice in reviews. And this point came up on a separate panel I was on yesterday, which is the question, or I can't remember if I was on it or if I was watching it. I don't know. This whole thing's blurring together at this point.
It's one big panel.
It's earlier.
So we've been here for like 3 years. You just don't know about it.
The con is civilization.
We are the
Lexingtons. It's a Groundhog Day sort of thing.
I have the con. But it is just the...
There goes the panel.
It's gone. It's all good. But there is this question, you know, of should you just be nice? Should you just be polite? And it was Tansy Rayner Roberts on a different panel making the point that in her town in Tasmania where she grew up, there was one local film reviewer had been doing this his job for about 20 years. And the point was that you knew his personality, you knew what he liked in the film, what he didn't, you knew that if a film was over a certain length, he was guaranteed to hate it. Mm-hmm. It's this point of having a yardstick, I think, with reviews, rather than just being polite all the time. It's having something that you, the reader, once you've been reading that person for a while, can actively measure your own opinions against.
Right, yep.
And having a reasonable benchmark. Even if the person is constantly vitriolic, even if they are more restrained, the point is to have some idea of what their tastes are. And if you're just constantly disguising yourself with niceness, you're obfuscating the actual purpose of a review, which is to give the reader something to measure themselves against.
Mm-hmm. I tend to find that if the book smugglers, who I absolutely love, and I've known them for, oh God, forever, if they really, really dislike something, it's probably guaranteed that I'm going to like it. And also, it makes me want to buy those books to see, is it as bad as they're saying it is? So yeah.
Well, and there's also when, you know, I think it's really important to be honest. And, you know, I started my book blog about 6 months after I finished my MFA program. And the one thing I got out of my MFA program is there's always something good and always something bad in pretty much everything you read. You can always find a positive and a negative. And so when I do look at a book, and if I absolutely hated the book, I know that there's always something, something that I can call out that the author may have done right. And so even when I would write a negative review, I would always find something positive to say about it without making it a false positive, you know?
Yeah.
I like that sort of false positive.
Sean, you had a...
I think this is something that it's not specific to the YA book blogging community, just the blogging community in general, that there is a tendency to not want to post negative reviews or reviews that are mostly negative. And I don't know if that derives from that same fear we were talking about earlier. It may be this, there's also some aspect of that that they don't want to tick off an author because there are instances in which some authors have, it seems like they've gone off the deep end in response to negative reviews. But there is that tendency, and I would argue that if all you're posting is just positive reviews, you're not really doing anything different from just saying nice things all the time, because right. That's all anyone's going to see from you. And that's very difficult, I think, for bloggers, because we don't want to be the person that rips apart right. some poor author's book.
Except when we really do.
Except when maybe there's
some
like a catharsis. Yeah.
And also, on the opposite end, there are some really good books that do something that's, you know, that have problems. And I think it's fair that you really do, you can praise a book to high heaven, but if you see a legitimate problem in the story, it's kind of your duty to call that out as well. You can't just gloss over it.
Because authors read these blogs too, and I mean, if nobody says, "Well, this didn't make sense," they won't know, and they can't fix it in their next book.
Right.
But it's also, I think, a question of I did have a point, and it just went straight.
It's out there. Someone grab it.
Somebody else talk. It'll come back to me.
Well, could we go to, back to that point about why you should even listen to a blogger's opinion? Me personally, I don't think there's any good reason you should take someone's opinion seriously in the sense that, like, oh, well, I'm going to listen to that person and I'm going to buy the books that they say they like. Because it comes down to personal taste. I mean, I read some bloggers who like books that I will never like. But I like the way they talk about books. And it may turn out, as you were noting, Liz, that they, like with the book smugglers, if they hate a book, you're going to like it.
Exactly.
But you wouldn't know that unless you had sort of been paying attention to how they engage in their own criticism. Yeah. And so I don't think it's about like whether or not we have an authentic view and, you know, you go to that person and that's the person that decides what you buy. But it is about figuring out how people review what kinds of things that they enjoy, because that becomes a barometer you can use for your own tastes, I think.
And I do think it is important to mention also on the topic of why people read book blogs, particularly YA book blogs. I mean, speaking from my own experience, when I was growing up in Australia and I was a teenager and I was looking for books to read, there was nowhere to find out what kind of stuff would interest me. I mean, I could go to the library and I could browse the shelves, and I did. My dad would give me the literary pages from the local paper or from the bigger paper, and I would look through, and they would have small sections of YA, but there tended not to be a big focus on fantasy, which is what I was interested in. The reviews tended to be less reviews than they were blurb summaries, and they were inevitably written by people who were so far outside the culture and the age bracket of where those books were aimed at, which isn't to say that adults don't read YA, but it's become, as a widespread phenomenon, a much more recent thing. And at the time, this was just people whose job was mostly to read books for adults, having a little sort of side foray into young adult stuff,
right,
and trying to figure out what I should be reading on the basis of that. I think there has been such an explosion in YA bookblogging, particularly because the internet has, for the first time, given a forum to the people who are reading the book, to younger adults and to people in their 20s and 30s. It's gotten rid of, because there wasn't so much gatekeepers, it was just the gatekeepers weren't interested in this for a while. And that's why this community just gone, well, here's a niche, we're just going
to
evolutionize right in there.
Let's fill it.
Right. And, you know, yesterday, and I think it's also important to call out that, you know, it's not hard to set up a blog. It's really easy, and there are a lot of kids out there that get a little WordPress account, they get their mom and dad to help them, like,
get a little WordPress account there, it was like they try some weed and
you never know.
This is a gateway criticism.
It really is.
Then they grow up to become academics and the whole thing's ruined.
The world went dead.
People will make you think.
And you know, one of the girls on the What Teens Are Reading panel yesterday, she, Iris Weil, she has her own book blog, and we were looking at, you know, who to put on that panel. And I looked at her book blog and I was blown away. I'm like, oh my God, how old is she? This is fabulous. And she has people sending her books and like, wow, you know, if I'm looking for a book, I'm actually going to look at Iris's book blog and see what she has to say about it.
So what's it called?
I don't remember.
Iris Wild.
Do a search for Iris Wild. She's Fran Wild's daughter.
There's a fabulous post going around on Tumblr at the moment, which beautifully shows up on my dash, which is somebody saying, you know, all of these talented, you know, young teenagers on the internet right now. And when I was 13, I was doing vampire LARPing on a Dreamwidth server, so I'm going to need you all to start sucking some more.
I know my first response to any problem is to Google it or read a book about it. So that's how I find what to read, and that's how a lot of other people find what to read and what to... They find knowledge on the internet. That was going to be much more profound, but it's 10 in the morning.
Such internet, very book, wow.
Great. Honestly, that's the way, if you're a writer and you're looking for a blogger to review your book, look, just Google book blogs, you know, young adult book blogs. There's actually directories out there. And you can just skim down and look at each one and see what they have to offer and even see what kind of books that they're blogging and see if they're like the books that you've written. And I would say Google is probably your best friend, whether you're a reader or a writer, because it will get you connected to that blogosphere that you're trying to find.
So I have a question, right? So one of the reasons we actually decided to stop My Favorite Books blog is we went to a chef breakfast morning. Okay. And so the usual people were there. They were all like in their 20s and 30s and whatever. And up rocks this kid. Honest to God, he was 12. He looked about 8. And he was so astute. And he was just... He embarrassed me because he used like really big words. And it was early in the morning. And I'm like, I'm too old for this. And it turns out that he's, yeah, he's 12. He was there with his mom because his mom wouldn't let him travel by himself on a Saturday morning in London, which is, you know, good for her. But they are just really, really young. And they are so savvy. Plus, he's writing his own book. And, yeah, right. And actively started talking to the editors and things about the submissions process. And he was marketing himself like I have not ever seen anyone do before in real life who was not an adult. And I'm thinking that blogging is definitely going towards a far younger generation who are far more savvy, technologically aware as well, because all of them have got good blogs. I mean, I don't want to go on YouTube and talk to people about these 20 books that I read this week because, I mean, my face on YouTube, like... So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this starting to be a younger person's game?
Sure. I don't know if... Maybe in small pockets it is, because I thought a few years back that there was conversation about, maybe this is a repetitive thing, of the blogging area, like, sort of dissipating.
Yeah.
I seem to recall there was a lot of conversation about that a couple of years ago. But you may be right that there's like a pocket that sort of exploded. But it certainly seems that blogging is not as big as it used to be. And I think that's either to do with the proliferation of platform styles or the fact that YouTube has destroyed the world. Because it's just enormous. I mean, you're right, because there are all of these book vlogs, people who do all of these video-based things. I mean, so that would be my take, but you may be right, at least on some level, that there is some. Yeah.
Well, I think that also book blogs are only sustainable for so long, depending on who you are. And some of my favorite blogs actually retire for a lot of reasons. Like, they end up getting married, or they have a family, or they become a writer, or they go on to publish, or because that's what I did. And so you do see this transition. People who love books, who get into writing about books, and through book blogging and interacting with writers and other book bloggers, they find things that they love, and eventually they go to pursue those things. And, you know, but when one book blog ends, another one begins. And so I think that's one thing that hasn't gotten a lot of notice, is that you're seeing some of these bigger, older blogs, and I don't mean persons, but the blogs themselves, retiring from the internet and blogging, but they're going into other aspects of the book industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, returning briefly to the point about having younger people, having, you know, sort of 12, 13, 11-year-olds doing this kind of thing, and touching back on the earlier point about criticism in school, the kind of thing that you're shoehorned into doing in high school, I would suggest that this is perhaps representative of people who are, you know, wanting, as young people, to have a critical outlet, to actually discuss, to do the kind of critical thinking that you're ostensibly meant to do in school, and needing another outlet for it because it's not being met. You can't actually... I mean, I know that school has changed since I was there, but one of the things I don't think has changed is... If you're told this is how you're meant to interpret a text, as we were always told to call them, you're not allowed to push back a lot. You're not allowed to bring in your own things. You tend to have set texts and set interpretations, set language that you can use. And it can be really frustrating when you're somebody with opinions and you're trying to learn how to have them, and you're trying to learn how to engage with criticism and discourse and fandom. And when you can go home and go on the internet and go, wow, here are all these conversations, and I'm 12, but I'm talking to academics in other countries, you know, on somewhere like Tumblr, and I'm learning all of these things that I'm not actually allowed to apply in school, I'm getting discouraged from doing. I need an outlet. I need somewhere to talk about this stuff with people who aren't going to say, this is above your level or this is wrong.
It's kind of like a water cooler conversation in a way, mm-hmm. You know, about books.
And I think it's much more, if you're trying to look at, you know, where the end process of this, which is at least one permutation of it, is academia.
Right.
This is the kind of thing that, you know, really rocks your boat. It's, you know, you might end up as an academic. But the kind of discourse that you're getting online, particularly at the early stages, I think is much more akin to academic discourse than anything that you're exposed to in high school. Because, and this is why I think a lot of people flounder when they get from high school to university, because before it's like everybody is leading you by the hand, this is the words you have to use, this is what you have to do. And then you get to university and it's like, no, just have an opinion. And they're like, but what opinion?
what opinion do you want?
Well, is this going to be on the test? I don't know. If anything, that's gotten worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I actually teach literature at the university level. And the biggest problem I have is when I tell them, this is not analysis. You need to write analysis. And like, they basically only know how to summarize. Like, tell me what the book is about. And that's because in the school system, what they're learning is a very rigid form of interpretation.
Yeah.
And that doesn't actually, that's not actually interpretation.
No, it's parroting.
Right. It's like, here's a metaphor, and that's a metaphor for a thing, and I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Move on. Whereas if you're doing, as you're suggesting, if you're blogging about books and you're having conversations about books, you're actually looking at the meanings that are underneath in the text. And that's just why Tumblr's great.
Right. Yeah, it took me ages to actually understand meta in fiction, because that was never taught in high school.
I mean, I learned the word meta in school when we were doing some form of English analysis, but it never really made sense the way we were doing it in school, because we weren't allowed to disagree with the teacher.
Tumblr taught me meta. Seriously. I mean, I fell into Tumblr probably November 2013, and it's like crap.
Yeah.
Right. You know, in school you get taught the pyramid structure for writing an essay, you know, the opening, the three paragraphs, and then the closing. And when you get to college, your teachers tell you, or your professors tell you, no, that's not how you write a persuasive essay, at least at the college level. And you see that, you know, a lot of these bloggers are naturally gravitating away from that really rigid structure that you get, you know, in high school or grade school, and just naturally going towards a style that professors in college often prefer.
I mean, when I was in high school, my final year, this is in the Australian system, I did multiple history units, and one of the history units was the default. There was a modern class and an ancient class, and then I did the extension one as well. And the difference between them, every year we had this problem. As soon as you went into the extension class, you were being taught, which was considered, you know, advanced or extra or whatever, you were being taught about subjectivity and objectivity and historical bias, and how you had to pick your sources and how you had to pick a point and argue it. And then you would literally get back to the class, which is some of the other class, which would sometimes be taught by the same teacher. And you weren't allowed to use what you've learned in the advanced class, because you had to answer the questions the way that class wanted you to. And we were all sitting there going, but you've just taught us that when we're really in university and we're doing proper essays then, like we're going to be doing next year, we're going to have to use this analysis. And I'm like, well, no, we can't. We don't need you to ask questions about the First World War. We just need you to tell us what the names and dates were. And everyone was just sort of sitting there being really baffled. It was this really kind of two-tiered thing. And I honestly think there's an argument, therefore, to say that the internet is taking up the intellectual slack that the failures in our current high school system, you know, should be fixing, and they're not. And so people are just going, well, I can go on the internet and I can actually just circumvent this entire educational dead end that secondary has become.
And that's one of the things that I think is really great about the whole blogging sphere, is there is no sort of standard for how people are blogging. I mean, there are people who will review in a very casual tone. There are people who will be more academic. You, Foz, are a little more brutal. I mean, there are people who are extremely... like,
that's flatter, isn't
it? Yeah, Abigail Nussbaum, who does incredibly detailed reviews. There's more academic reviews, there's less academic reviews, there's sort of more of the like Roger Ebert style, like I'm giving it two thumbs up and that kind of thing. So there is that variety and that you don't get perhaps in a school system. And I think that's great.
The development of voice as well.
Yeah.
And allowed to change the voice over time. You're allowed to fail, which in school you're really not. The whole point of developing a writing style or any kind of academic or intellectual skill is that you have to be able to fail sometimes over and over and over again in order to develop the necessary skill set. But if every time you fail you're penalized, it discourages you from trying again, even when that's people saying, no, you have to do it better next time, you have to do it better next time. No, you can just fail on a blog. You can have people pull you up, you can have people correct you, and you get better over time.
Well, and it's great. It also gives you an outlet to create your own standards, whether you're a you know, a young person writing a blog or an adult writing a blog, as you're, you know, critiquing or reviewing a book, you develop your own voice as a writer. And I think that that is extremely important for us all to kind of figure out who we are. And if that takes going on a blog and doing that and kind of growing up and growing into your voice through the blog outlet, I think that is a beautiful thing. And when authors are looking or publishers are looking for bloggers, they're often looking for these people that actually have something to say about the book. And, you know, whether it's positive or negative, as long as a person is able to articulate an argument and to back it up and to discuss character and motive and all these things that people want to know about, you know, it's all for the better. And I just love that you're seeing all these young people create standards for themselves and meeting those standards and testing books by those standards. It's really exciting.
And I really like that you've got this age divergence in the community as well. Again, compared to high school where everyone's segregated according to the year that they're born. On the internet and bookworming communities, you have people who are 12 getting advice from people who are in their 50s. You've got people of all ages and all backgrounds all over the world talking and communicating respectfully and engagedly about all of these kind of things that they're passionate about. And I just think this is not a kind of intellectual forum that we currently see in other places. And it's brilliant. It's creating wonderful people.
It's a borderless system, which is fabulous. Like that's how I met some of the UK bloggers and some Aussie bloggers. And, you know, that's how I met Charles Tan, a blogger in the Philippines. And it's just a wonderful environment for bringing people together to talk about books.
That's what I love about the online community, Twitter, more so, it's when I see somebody saying, I really like this book, say, Ancillary Justice, for instance, by Ed Leckie, and you just see somebody completely unrelated say exactly the same thing, and they're also a blogger, and you know that these two people have never actually spoken. And there's not actually been any PR from the publisher about this book. You just think, okay, so maybe there's something there, and then you see it starting to snowball where more and more people are saying it, and they're still not talking to one another about it. And you think to yourself, okay, so maybe this is a thing. This is a book that I should really pick up, because there is no PR behind it. This is completely natural, and it's very rare. And this is where I think the blogging community comes in.
Well, picking up on what you just said, that I do think that publishers are relying, as things get more and more expensive, publishers are relying more and more on the blogger community to do some of that blogging and free publicity, basically, which, you know, is that good or bad? I'm not sure. But I think as a blogger, being able to get some awesome books before they're out and you get the chance to read it, I'm all for it.
So I did this. It was horrifying. I did this. I couldn't write it by the Young Publishers Association to an evening in Oxford. And this is before I quit blogging. And I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be a panel sort of like this, chatting about blogs and blogging and what blogging is and all of that. No, I got to sit down and talk to the editor of the literary section of the Times. And this guy is like in his 60s. And I'm like, okay, so basically I'm doing your job and I'm doing it for free. And he was not a nice guy. And he was really, really negative towards bloggers, basically saying, you know, these people shouldn't be out there because they're not allowed to have an opinion because they're not educated. They're taking the jobs away from the literary people within, like, the printed media and all of that. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to kill him now.
But you could just say, I mean, if you're doing your job so poorly that someone who is uneducated and unqualified is doing it better than you,
Exactly. It's like if you actually bothered not ignoring YA and genre fiction in general, it's like,
If you're not reviewing or talking about the things you want to talk about, we'll just talk about things somewhere else. Like the internet. The internet has no rules.
You fill your void.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the evolution of blogging, is it began as this thing, like all these silly people blogging about books on the internet. They're dumb, and they're not going to be worthwhile. Like, why are we sending them books? And now, of course, blogs are some of the most obvious. They're like some of the first choices. In fact, when I get one of those advanced copies that says what the marketing strategy is, it says blogs on the thing. I mean, it's whatever that guy thinks. It's sort of that like screaming at the clouds kind of thing. Was that, that
he
phrase?
It was just like this massive guilt trip that he was laying. Basically, saying, "Oh, you're taking my food out of my mouth. I'm like, hey, can you stand to use some like?"
And I think that
you're
goes
being recorded.
I think his problem is he misunderstands the difference between quote unquote like criticism and reviewing, which are sometimes the same thing but are sometimes not.
No.
I mean, there's a big difference between sort of like I'm writing lit crit and I'm gonna have these big conversations about books, and another saying this is a book that's good, you should like it.
But you know what really puzzles me about printed media is they always only focus on the genuinely big names, the people who got the big book deals, the people who are incredible, Martin Amis.
Because we're not even in competition with that.
Exactly.
This is a completely parallel stream. If we're dealing with stuff that up until now you have not deemed worthy of notice, if we're dealing with the books that you don't even think are worthy of criticism, let alone whatever you think we're doing, then why are you so distressed by it? But they were like, oh, no, but...
No.
Actually, stop and think about what you're doing.
I'll never forget, there was this one... I think she was also a Sunday Times reviewer who specifically did children's and YA books. And she went and she basically called, man, I will never forget this, and I will did this like her forever, even though she's actually a very nice person. She turned around and she said that commercial fiction for children, especially genre fiction, things with fantasy or sci-fi elements, children should not be reading them. Because they are turkey twizzlers for the brain. And I was like, what? I tell you, it kicked off such an outpour on Twitter and within like a lot of authors, because we
kids
knew
these days with their rap musics and their iWalkmans.
I know, right? There's also a lot to be said for the reviewers at the high level of the Times or wherever. They, I think, are often reviewing for adults.
Yeah, but is that really the high level anymore? I think the pyramid's flipped, and they haven't noticed.
I think that book bloggers really review for children, for the readers. Like how Foz started this off, is book bloggers really focus on the people who are going to be buying the books and reading the books and either loving or hating the books.
Yeah. All right, well, we're now at 35 past, so I would like to open the audience up for questions if anyone has any. Yes.
I'm a writer, and I would like to know, how would you like to be approached? What is the best thing for writers to do when approaching book bloggers in order to increase the chances of, I mean, you don't even care about a favorable review, just attention, that's all we want.
Okay, so the question was, just for the recording, how should authors approach book bloggers?
Oh yeah, we're going to have a conversation now. So, the big thing is, please, for the love of all that is sacred, read the guidelines. You know, even if you're wanting, like, if you say I have a book and I want you to like review it, read the guidelines, because I can't not express how annoying it is to get emails for types of books I don't read. You know, like somebody sends me a book like that's, you know, about baseball. It's like, yeah, well, my thing says I don't review books about baseball, so why would I? Why? So the big thing is read guidelines. The other is, usually the guidelines will say how the person prefers to be communicated with, like they want you to email them or they, like, whatever. The best thing, I think, is to be really just direct and just be honest and don't oversell. Just say, like, you know, I'm an author and here's my, this is me, of course, you guys can maybe offer your own. You know, I'm an author, I have a new book out, here's what it's about, you know, if you're interested, blah, done. If you go in there and you say, like, you know, I'm the next Dan Brown, or, well, no, that's a bad example. I'm the next J.K. Rowling, or whoever is the big hot stuff, and, like, this book's the greatest book in the whole universe, and you're going to love it, and you should have to review it. That's usually a put-off for me. That's not as interesting.
Usually not a very good book.
Usually, right. That's usually what that says, is not good book. Usually somebody who's sort of more just direct and maybe even a little bit humble.
I would say, yeah. You know...
And nice.
And, oh, yes, be nice.
Nice is important.
Be nice. Have an introductory paragraph. Have a paragraph with the book description. Don't include your manuscript in the email.
Unless they say to.
Yeah, unless in the submission guidelines it says that. Can't tell you how many times I've gotten a manuscript and the email basically said, here's a manuscript for your review. I look forward to hearing what you have to say about my book. And I'm like, I never said I would. And I've actually stopped reviewing, but, you know, thank you for sending me a manuscript that I just can't review. So I would definitely say, just remember to be polite and courteous and say thank you.
And I would add as well, I mean, when I do, I review books, I don't do it so much on my own blog, but I do review for Strange Horizons and for A Dribble of Ink and for a couple of other places. And the thing that I really appreciate if I'm getting a cold approach from a publisher or an author is flexibility about the submission time for the review. Because if you come to me and you say, I would really like this in the next couple of weeks, my to-be-read pile currently stretches into infinity. And I already have a million things that I want to read. And if you're asking for something... I mean, generally I can infer if you say this book is going to be launched next month that you would kind of like the review around then. But if you sort of add, you know, whenever you can get to it, that makes me feel a lot more comfortable and not like I'm having to suddenly mentally gauge your unknown book against the 20 that I want to read in the next 5 minutes. And I can better slot it into my schedule to figure out when I can do it justice.
I always, when I slow a review, and still now actually, lots of people approach me via Twitter. Because, God, this is embarrassing. I'm like the grandmother of UK blog people. And so people will say, you know, I've got a new book coming out. Can I at some stage just chat to you about who to approach within the like UKYA community? And even though I still know some of the older faces, a lot of the new kids I don't know, but then I'm always happy to refer this new writer to... say, you know, speak to this person. There's this girl in the UK, she does absolutely amazing stuff. She's only 13, Lucy Powery. She looks after the UKYA strand, and she blows my mind. This girl is going to take over the world, I swear to God. And she just, I mean, she's a powerhouse, and she hosts UKYA evenings on Twitter, and everybody takes part. You know, you delay your dinner or driving somewhere to take part in this, and the conversation is just brilliant. So for me, it would be start chatting to people via Twitter and social media and see what it is that they're going on about at the moment.
Alternatively, just actually talking to them on their blogs also sometimes is just as good. Yeah.
And one other side note is you don't always have to ask for a review. Bloggers are always looking for content, and so sometimes they have to be read piles that are to infinity, and perhaps they might like a guest blog post or a freebie that you know they can have a contest and give your book out with maybe a little something to go with the contest. So think creatively when you approach bloggers.
But as Sean said, do read the guidelines. I've had I don't do or I have not traditionally done guest posts on my blog. I have once or twice interviewed people who are authors who I'm friends with. But pretty much everything else I post is mine. And I've recently had about four requests. I think I must have gone up on a mailing list or something as a blogger. But I've recently had four people email me independently asking, can they do guest posts on my blog? And I haven't really replied because I don't do guest posts. And if you looked at my blog for five minutes, you would see that. And I don't really know how to respond to that.
I've got a question. How do you guys feel about blog tours? When we did My Favorite Books, we maybe did a handful, and then it was just, it quickly became apparent to us that blog tours aren't that popular because unless you are, I don't know, Holly Black, people, or Sarah Rees Brennan, or Cassie Clare, people are not going to follow
There is an oversaturation problem, I think. And it also, I think it's not fair on the author when publishers ask them to do that a lot of the time, because you're asking them essentially to create the same 2,000 words of content, sometimes, you know, 5-10 times.
Right.
Just, and it's so much work. And I don't think there's that much from it. If you just do one or two well-placed pieces, I think that's going to have much more impact than if you're doing 15 small interviews that are essentially going to be you answering the same questions over and over again, and you're going to get, if you can just place it right, you know.
But how do we get that across to publishers? As a blogger,
grab them firmly by the shoulders, stare into their eyes, and
make them come to panels like this. Make them listen to this recording.
All right, another question. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm just sort of wondering about sort of, have you noticed difference in approaching between blogging and vlogging at all?
Right, so the question was, have we noticed a difference in approach between blogging and vlogging, being video blogging? Anyone want to answer that?
I think you should answer.
You should answer. I think it's an interesting question, and I think it is part of this whole sort of wonderful digital wilderness that the internet is, that you can approach things in very different ways. And I think something like, you know, Hank Green, the Nerd Fighters, and John Green, all of that sort of thing. But you've also got people doing this off their own bat, and it's a very different medium, which I'm sort of only more starting to explore recently. But I do think there is a lot of potential in it. And again, I think this comes back to the earlier point about the internet taking up the slack that you're not seeing in secondary educations around institutions around this kind of thing. But just giving people a chance to perform, to speak in public. I mean, I remember we used to, in English class, we'd have to try and get up and talk in front of the class. But I think it takes an enormous amount of preparation and courage for somebody, particularly who's a younger person, to get on the internet and start their own YouTube channel and get an audience and start doing this regularly. But this is what people are doing, and it's fantastic. It's brilliant. And I know there's going to come a day when I'm the old gnarled crone who doesn't understand any of it, and perhaps it's correct, I think, that it past a certain point you don't necessarily understand what the new technology is doing or what the young people are doing with it, because it's not for you, it's for them, it's for a world that they're inheriting that you are trying to leave them. And if you're bequeathing something to somebody, you don't tell them how to use it. They get to do what they like with it.
I also think that if you're going to approach somebody who's doing a blog, check to see how many followers they've got. If you catch like a rising star pretty early and they can do a favourable review for you, I think that's definitely quite valuable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, someone
says something very mercenary.
Well, I mean, someone like Mark Ishiro, for instance, who's wonderful with his Mark watches and Mark reads, hilariously entertaining, brilliant content, but also very good with analysis and immediate response. Like, there's something extremely valuable in that, in watching somebody read something for the first time. And there's almost an oral tradition to it digitally, where we don't, you know, mostly reading is a private experience where you sit and read it, but seeing somebody read a book aloud and encouraging you to listen to that and to read along with them and to share their responses, that's, you know, or people when they're live blogging, when they're reading a certain thing. Very much this sort of digital village, literally in the term of, you know, call and response stories, when somebody says something about a story and you say something back. And it's a wonderful different types of communication. So, yeah, there is very much a difference between those two things, but I think it's all part of the same sort of nexus of stuff,
right,
in a very positive way. Another question. Yes.
I guess it's touched on what you were saying about blog tours, but seeing some of those in lots of places, but I always said if lots of people are talking about a book when there hasn't been a PR push for it, then you can think, this might be interesting, I'll pick it up. What about if it's the other way around, where maybe some book has gone up on NetGalley or something, and suddenly everyone reviews it in the same week? Do people find that off-putting to see? Because I know for me, if I scroll back through the book, my feed of blogs I'm following, and everyone is talking about the same thing, and I know that it was on NetGalley or some publisher sent it around, then I'm kind of more reluctant to read those reviews.
So it's sort of just sort of thinks that the question is if the difference between having no PR push and people talking about it organically, as opposed to not seeing people talking about it organically, but suddenly all the reviews appear, is that off-putting? What do you think?
Sure. I don't know if I would say it's so much off-putting. I think being in blogging, as long as I've been in it for a few years, it's just really transparent now, where when I see that happening and I know I'm not involved in it, I'm like, well, I know the publisher's pushing this. It just changes, I think, the conversation about the work itself, because it's different if people are, like when Anne Leckie's book came out, I don't remember what the PR push for that book was. I remember we did...
Okay. No. I just remember people talking about it and it getting perfect scores from people I deeply respected and going, okay, I didn't even read the summary of the book. I'm just like, I have to buy this immediately people I trust are saying it's awesome.
Yeah. So that develops very organically, whereas something where it's, you know, like some big new Dan Brown book and they're like doing this big old thing, it just becomes very clear, like one is about selling books, the other is sort of a lot more compelling, because if it's people talking about it and they can't shut up about it, that's a book that's really, for me, is much more worth paying attention to.
Yeah, there is an extent of like trying to achieve artlessness through artifice. And you can understand the intention there, but it can backfire if you're just seeing the same thing over and over, but you're not really seeing anything heartfelt about it. You're just like, okay, yeah, no, that's it.
Well, I think going back to the video blogging question on, you know, associated with that last comment you made, Foster, one thing I love about video bloggers is you see how they feel. Like, you hear and see how they feel. And, you know, when you're writing a review, you get what they're trying to put on paper, and they revise it, and they go over it, and they make it just how they want it to be. Whereas a video blog, you're seeing them smile, you're seeing them talk, you're seeing their excitement, you're hearing it, and you really get what they feel about that. So there's something added that you might get from video blogging that you may not get on a written blog as well.
I know as a reviewer, just as soon as everybody started talking about the same thing, I was just like, you know what, I'm so not interested, because even if I were interested and I ended up reviewing it, it was just going to become part of the noise, and then I just walk away, and then maybe a year later, I'll go, yeah, maybe I'll give it time. Oh, crap, it is actually that good.
All right, I've had the 5-minute warning. We've got time for one more question. Yes.
I actually have a comment and a question. Comment relates to how writers approach blogs. I've had writers suddenly say, oh, can I send my book, please, to you? And then you review it. And then I say, oh, and then they can add it and say, can you review my book?
That's not how it works.
If you want your book reviewed and you lend it to a book reviewer, just happy with the level again and send an angry email after. The other question I have for you guys is, you mentioned just the waistline you just need to be right. Or do you need to be honest? I think you can be quite worthy of that if you at the same time you just want to be
Yes. So the comment there was when authors will approach a blogger asking for a review and then not like the review and request that it be taken down, this is bad etiquette, don't do it. I completely agree. And then the question was on the lines of, is it possible to be honest and polite at the same time in responding to perhaps a book that you don't necessarily like?
Yes.
And I think, yes,
it
definitely.
Is, because I've done that. I'm very honest in my reviews, and I'm very polite in my reviews. I like to say nice things about people, but if there's something that's not particularly nice, like if the characters were a bit wooden or there were plot holes, I would point that out in the nicest possible way. I'll say, okay, these were the good things. However, there were also some bad things.
Yeah, you've got to compare and contrast. Right. Because something that you consider a negative, you know, something you might think is a bug rather than a feature, someone else would think is a feature and not a bug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that becomes very difficult if you get a book where it's really, really bad, because no matter, you can be polite, but it's not necessarily going to be interpreted as polite if you have almost nothing good to say.
I was damning with faint praise.
Yeah. And I've had a couple instances of that where I've read a book and I'm just, I don't even know how to make this sound nice, what I'm about to write about this, because it's bad, it's not good.
So. When you write a negative review or a review with a bit of negative in it, you just have to remember not to make it about the author. I think that sometimes authors really do feel attacked when a review is negative. And as long as you are keeping your review about the work.
Yeah, don't hit the fourth wall.
Right.
I came out to have a good time and I'm honestly feeling so attacked right now.
Exactly. But yeah, authors should never ask for reviews to be taken down. Don't write back and say you have all these typos. Don't write back and say this is wrong. I mean, all those things might be true. The review might actually be a bad review because it's bad, poorly written and poorly expressed. Not all reviews are well written. I'll admit that. But authors should just let it go and know that people are smart enough to know. Exactly. Walk away and let it go.
Just real quick, just remember, too, that bloggers talk to each other.
Yes.
So if you happen to be an author and you have one of, like, you have a hissy fit, it's very likely that blogger is going to go talk to their friend bloggers, and you're going to find yourself having a hard time getting reviews from those bloggers. It'll be a blacklist, basically, because nobody wants to deal with a difficult author.
Bloggers also talk to publishers. God, this sounds awful. We sound like a mafia, but we're not really. All right, we have to stop now, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.